Hello and welcome to the Baseball America podcast. I'm Hudson Belinsky. This week we're going to talk about the Area Code Games, the premier showcase event for some of the top high school talent in the nation, held every year in Long Beach, California, at Blair Field, home of Long Beach State baseball there. So a fantastic event and a really must-see event for most of the top evaluators from amateur scouting departments. So we were out there. Mike Lanana and I were out there from August 6th through the 10th and covering the event. Pretty much, you know, we roll into the field around 8 a.m. and you're there until the late hours of the evening, watching guys, bearing down on prospects, and learning as much as we possibly can about the 2017 draft class and getting to know these players a little bit and also getting to talk to them and some coaches and scouts as well, and understanding how this kind of class, this 2017 draft class, shapes up. So that was kind of our experience out there. What you're going to hear on this podcast, we have myself and Mike Lanana. We're going to talk about some of the themes from the Area Code Games, some top names, and you know, we won't necessarily introduce these names individually and give you all the background information that you want on those players, but you can check out our site. Go to baseballamerica.com. We've got tons of content on there from the Area Code Games, and more is still coming out over these next few days. We have a feature that I'm pretty excited about. So, yeah, I mean, and the other things Mike Lanana is working on are obviously going to be outstanding. You know, everything he does is gold. So you're going to hear a conversation between Mike and myself. And then after that, you're going to hear a conversation between myself and Alan Jaeger. Alan, a well-renowned pitching coach and more than a pitching coach, kind of a pitching philosopher of sorts. That's probably the best way to describe what he is. He's been in the game for a really long time. Over two decades of coaching athletes and helping them develop. And Alan has is primarily known probably for his long toss and armband philosophy and some really, really fascinating stuff. And he's just so concerned with arm care and building arm strength and building arm health. And so him and I talked about Hunter Green, who's a 2017 draft prospect, who is one of the top prospects in the class as both a shortstop and a right-handed pitcher. But so Alan and I talked about him and Alan's experience working with Hunter and Hunter's family. So a very fascinating interview there, and we'll have more on Hunter Green in the coming days and weeks here. But then we also, the conversation shifts to arm health in general, and we talk about the epidemic of Tommy Johns and sort of this wave of arm injuries that we've seen over the past few years and how we might be able to get past that as a sport. So it's a fascinating interview with Alan Jaeger. Huge thanks to him and huge thanks to the Student Sports and Area Code crew for putting us up and allowing us the space and the access to the players. And Joe Murphy, Joey Mihalik, Kirsten Leach, just outstanding people, and they did a great job running the event. So without further ado, you're going to hear Mike Lanana and I chat, and then we'll take a quick break, and then you'll hear Alan Jaeger. So thanks for tuning in, and we really appreciate you listening and downloading. I'm Hudson Belinsky. With me is Mike Lanana. We're going to talk some Area Code Games. We've been out in Long Beach for what seems like quite a long time. We're actually on our way to LAX. I'm flying out in a little bit here, but Mike, how was your week here in Long Beach?
Yeah, man, it's been good. We saw a lot of talent at Area Code Games, a lot of velocity, some pitchers who grunted a little more than other pitchers. But it's been a good week. It was really fun to see Hunter Green, especially on a pitcher's mound. You know, a guy who is in the conversation for one of the first picks in the draft and was touching 98 on the mound, really had electric stuff. And then, you know, you see some other guys who kind of emerge a little bit, guys who may be flying under the radar. I know we've talked a lot about, you and I, about, you know, Trevor Rogers on the Reds Area Code team, who who did really well, especially in his first performance.
Really loose, you know, easy velocity, a left-handed guy. So, you know, it was fun to see the guys that we had heard about and see them in action. Jordan Adell homering and having a really good week, guys like that. But it was also fun to see, you know, some guys that you don't hear as much about, you know, excel on this platform.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And Mike LeMaire actually wrote an article leading up to the area code games, you know, and it was about an individual who we can get into in a minute, but the main point, the thesis of the article was, you know, for guys like Hunter Green, you know, this is sort of just another stop on the trail to being a high draft pick, but for some other players, this is an important eye-opening event. And so Mike LeMaire wrote about Jordan Anderson, who's a quick twitch outfielder from Alabama, I believe, who is really starting to put together his raw tools. And over the past week, we've seen him as an organization. We've seen him at the East Coast Pro Showcase and at the Area Code Games, and he's gone from a guy who, you know, might be a guy to a real dude. And the ball came off his bat really well this week in Long Beach. And he's kind of finding out, you know, figuring out how to use that bat speed. And he's just another, an example of one of many prospects who established themselves on the national scene. And you mentioned Trevor Rogers. This is a guy who's a 6'6" left-hander with an athletic, free and easy delivery and just easy gas in his first outing out there, you know, mid-90s with, you know, a sharp little breaking ball that he had. And the thing that impressed me most about Trevor Rogers was the command. And we saw that in his second outing, too, where he's just going up there and playing catch, basically, is what it looks like. And then he's hitting his spot down in glove side or down in arm side, and hey, he can go up if he needs to. So it was a really impressive look at him. He's the left-hander out of Carlsbad, New Mexico, who hadn't been on the national scene yet.
Right, right. And then, you know, you look at the teams themselves, and, you know, it is, you know these teams are competitive. You know, they want to win, and you look at the Brewers, you know, and what they did in this tournament and you know, not losing a game. And you look at the depth of talent that they had, and I know we had a conversation about it. I mean, is this the best area code teams ever, or at least the best area code teams that you and I have seen?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, this is the second time that you and I have covered the games here, and it, without question, for me, this was the most talented team, you know, over these 2 years that we've been coming. But, you know, just kind of talking to some people about it, and it seems like, yeah, this is a banner year for that Brewers team. And they're from Southern California, and they represent Southern California every year. And so they're going to have great teams. It just makes sense. It's kind of intuitive. You have one of the best regions, one of the best demographic regions in the country. You're representing that, you're going to have a good team. But even for that region, it's pretty darn good, because we have high-end talent guys like Hunter Green, Royce Lewis, Garrett Mitchell, Calvin Mitchell. I mean, we're just scratching the surface. You saw on the mound right-hander Kyle Hurt, who really went out and established himself early on, and, you know, was low 90s with, you know, a feel for a breaking ball and a changeup that was pretty nasty.
Yeah.
I mean, and then there was just, you know, Jeremiah Estrada, who again, another guy who was low 90s and had a good changeup and spun the ball when he needed to. And, I mean, it was just ridiculous the amount of depth that this Brewers team had. And even when you got to the last day, they're still throwing out arms like guys like Matthew Sauer, who's a wiry, projectable guy who could spin the ball a little bit and move his fastball in and out of the strike zone. And on most teams at the area code games, a guy with that kind of profile is the dude.
Yeah,
that's your dude. And here, not to say that he's not a you know, a great player, but he's just one of several on this Brewers team this year.
Yeah, and I think the perfect illustration of the depth of this Brewers staff is you look at what they did yesterday on the last day of the event when most staffs, you know, they've used all their arms. And, you know, the guys are pitching again and all that sort of thing. They no-hit the White Sox yesterday, a very good team, you know, maybe the second-best team out there, certainly in the discussion in terms of talent. They no-hit them, the first no-hitter in area code games history. That tells you, I think, everything you need to know about the depth of the pitching on that Brewers staff. And obviously, it's a very talented team from top to bottom. It was a fun team to watch this week. That was certainly a highlight.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the White Sox team being maybe the second best team here. You know, in terms of guys, maybe some personal cheese balls or some players that maybe. You know, we haven't necessarily pumped up yet, you know, as an organization, but we're on as an organization. Some players that we've been impressed by. Is there anyone this week who you said, hey, I kind of like this guy. This is impressive what he's doing.
Yeah, certainly. You know, I think there were a few guys on the Nationals team who stood out, I thought. You know, Mason Hickman, I thought was really, really great, obviously, in his performance. And I know he had a similar performance in East Coast Pro where he's, you know, striking out every guy, a right-hander who is, you know, hovering around, you know, 90, you know, 90, 91 or so, but, you know, really is commanding the ball and spinning the breaking ball. And it was really just, you know, guys weren't picking him up, whatever it was, whether it was late life or just hiding the ball well or whatever. I mean, just a lot of swings and misses, you know, and it was really fun to watch him. And, you know, looking around at some other teams, you know, guys who kind of, you know, stood out that you weren't necessarily expecting. I mean, I thought Jason Willow on the Royals team, a guy from British Columbia.
Hashtag Team C.
Yeah, who was really pounding the ball all week. You know, he was really impressive. And then, you know, on the Yankees team, I thought, you know, Andrew Papantonis had a really nice week, a shortstop. You know, part of the Greek team, I guess, the future Greek team. He homered. He made a tremendous play earlier in the week where he threw out a runner at home from basically shallow left field, and you know, so he flashed some tools, and you know, so those guys really stood out to me. And also, you know, a guy who maybe in terms of name doesn't fly under the radar because he's Dusty Baker's son, but I thought Darren Baker, stood out just in terms of, you know, not he doesn't have power per se, but he's, you know, a kind of a scrappy leadoff type, you know, a left-handed hitter, a guy who had a lot of hits going to the opposite field and showcased some speed as well, stole some bases, so he was fun to watch.
Yeah, what impressed me about Darren Baker is, and I talked to him just briefly, just ran into him and introduced myself, and I said, you know, I said, hey, nice work in center field, and he's like, really? He was like kind of surprised because he had never played center field before, and this was a new experience for him. And this is a guy whose profile is more of, you know, a slap and dash kind of guy who's going to try to put the ball in play, stay short to the baseball, and kind of drive a line drive to the gaps, and allow his speed to kind of dictate what the result is going to be. But his defense, for the most part, was very impressive this week. And this is a guy who has some bloodlines and has some aptitude and feel for the game. So it was an impressive look at Darren Baker. I mean, you're exactly right. I knew his name. Didn't know he was a name guy, though, which is, there is a difference to that. I mean, and, you know, when I say name guy, I'm talking about a legitimate pro prospect. And I'm not sure exactly how Baker fits in this kind of class with a deep outfield crop on the prep side, and some, you know, some improvements he's gonna have to make to his game, but certainly a guy who you could see down the line, you know, having a chance to play in professional baseball. But yeah, I mean, there were to address some of those guys. I mean, the Nationals, I think, were a great example of a team that had prospects step up. And you mentioned Mason Hickman, the right-hander from Tennessee, who's committed to Vanderbilt. I mean, this is a guy who eventually, you know, if he goes to Vanderbilt, you know, watch out. This is a weekend guy. I mean, it was just 6'5" or 6" downhill and 91, and then he could really spin the ball and manipulate his breaking ball. And I talked to him for, you know, just a minute, and, you know, not on the record or anything, just kind of see, you know, hey, what's up? How did that work? And he, you know, he said, you know, what I realized here is you keep the ball off the corners, and hitters at this level can be exposed that way. And so showing some aptitude, some feel for the game at such a young age, and that's a really impressive trait. And so to speak about some aptitude and feel for the game, you know, Jordan Nadell is a guy who at East Coast Pro, you know, if you saw him there, if you're a scout watching him at East Coast Pro, you kind of think of him as like, all right, well, he's got non-offensive tools, but I don't know if that's a guy who can really use them. And then this week, you know, the ball comes off his bat really well in game action. He shows the ability to make some more contact, and then he hit some ropes. And he showed you his arm strength. He showed you his speed. What was your impression of Jordan Nadell this week? You know, getting to kind of see him and be around him and actually interview him. Kind of what were some things that about him that stood out to you?
I mean, well, just talking to the kid, I mean, he's very polished. You know, you certainly see, you know, hints of star power, you know, there with him, just in the way that he carries himself. And, you know, obviously you look at what he did this week at the plate. It had a very nice offensive week at the plate, you know, kind of, you know, a lot of two-way guys in this tournament, you know, kind of like Hunter Green. He's a guy who's shown some velocity on the mound before, wasn't necessarily there this week velocity wise he's more 90-91, but
Adele, you mean?
Yeah. Adele. But, you know, still an impressive performance on the mound, and a guy who's showing you, you know, a lot of different things, a lot of different parts of his game. I mean, this was my first real extended look at him. I mean, I'd seen him in Jupiter a little bit last year in October. And, you know, I came away impressed. You know, certainly he stepped up to the moment and performed well. And, you know, a guy who was a tough out, you know,
yeah,
really all week. And that's really all you can ask for, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's what's really impressive. And I was just, you know, having kind of an offhand conversation with a scout about this week. And it was, you know, it was like, hey, this guy's really made adjustments well and shown the ability to do that. I mean, his swing is completely different than it was in the beginning of the season. That's just one adjustment. You can start to see him recognizing how pitchers are trying to attack him, and, you know, he's going to be a guy who's going to be pounded away, and that's what's going to happen all year, and even in the spring they're going to try to pound this guy away, and you know, hope that he lunges at the ball and swings over it. And so he's shown at least the fact that he can recognize when you'll see him check his swing on a pitch that's on the outer half. He's understanding, like, oh, hey, okay, maybe I might not be able to square that ball up, but if they come inside on me, they're not going to win this battle. So you know, understanding his strengths and weaknesses and kind of learning how to use those to his advantage on the field.
And now, one-on-one with Alan Jaeger.
Welcome back to the podcast. Joining me, Alan Jaeger. Alan, how is it going? We're here at the Area Code Games, the sunny Southern California. What's going on?
Well, as you know, it's great to be here. It's fun to see so many great friends and people you see for years and years and years, and meet great people like you that are in the community that are, you know, really helping to bring the best out of this game. So, what can I say? It's great to be here.
Yeah, and so the way we're going to kind of do this interview, it's the BA people are getting both the interview kind of on the record thing that I'm working on a feature story that should be out by the time this podcast is out. But then also we're going to get into some of your philosophy and some of the things you've been working on lately and some of the ideas you have. But the player I'm working on this story on is Hunter Green, who came out here at the Area Code Games and was pretty electric, as he is pretty much every time he steps on the mound. First off, when did you
When did you first meet Hunter Green?
So Hunter's dad, Russell, called us to come out to a camp that we used to do in the summer and in the fall, and he asked if he could bring Hunter out, and Hunter was 7 at the time. And as I would do with any parent, I would say, you know, a lot of stuff we do in the camp is mental training based, and so, you know, the one thing we really do baseball-wise is throwing and arm care, but really there's a lot of stretching, there's some yoga, there's a lot of breathing and relaxation and focus and stuff like that. I said, I don't know if a 7-year-old's really going to... So long story short is, Russell, I could just tell he had that attitude, like, I don't know, he's going to be fine. And I said, okay, well, come bring him out the first day. If the first day he feels a little overwhelmed or not into it, you know, you can just back out. And so, of course, at that early age, he was already that in tune, and so he did the camp, and you know, he's just been someone from a very, very young age to I'd say just stay with the principles, I think, of what we really believe in, especially with the throwing and the arm care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And him as an individual, I mean, watching him on the mound, kind of, and you have so much experience working with guys who have gone through this process, who've gone through the showcases, and you know, gone to college or gone through and gone to the draft. Who are some people you've worked with who he reminds you of, maybe in terms of stuff or maybe in terms of preparation?
It's funny we're just talking about him, but in a way, he reminds me a little bit of Lucas Giolito in the sense that very, very grounded, very in tune with his preparation, and has a really kind of relaxed calmness about him, even though he's extremely talented. And so he's one guy that jumps out at me. It's hard to compare Hunter because Hunter is really, he's just really unique, obviously. But I think Giolito, from a lot of it from the character part and just the feel, the way he is, just as a just very, what's the word I'm looking for? He's very humble, and he just has a way about him where he's not caught up with the drama going on around him. I think that's the key thing. He's not caught up with the drama.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you worked with him when he was 7 years old. Kind of, is that normal to you to have a 7-year old who's like that, or even to have a family who's that, you know, that has that kind of professional approach to the game at such a young age?
Yeah, it's very unusual, but I think that it's sort of how things work out. Because it's unusual who he's become, you can argue, but it makes sense because he's so unique in what he did at such a young age, and now he's a very unique, you know, byproduct of that. So I think in a way they go hand in hand. I think the fact that the parents were so, you know, did such a great job raising him, but were so in tune with development at such a young age. It just makes sense to me watching his path. I mean, at 12 years old, I think he was thrown at 240 feet. Mm-hmm. You could just sense that, you know, it was hard to project like he's going to be what he was going to be now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess it was unique at the time, but it makes sense in a way when you look back now.
Mm-hmm. You know, so we were talking, you know, before we recorded a couple days ago, about kind of how it's normal now. Everybody is, so many players are long tossing and working with the bands and things like that. But I guess this is a decade ago when Hunter's getting started. Kind of, how do you think the perception of your teaching and of your philosophy has changed over the past decade?
Well, I think our teaching actually has been actually consistent for 26 years, honestly. It really hasn't changed. I mean, I think we've maybe added other components, or we're huge fans of, you know, Ron Wolforth and Driveline and Kyle Bodie and obviously, you know, Eric Cressy. So I think that the fact that we like what's going on in the community that's very supportive of our principles and obviously have their own principles. But honestly, our approach to long toss and arm training and arm development and band work has been there since 1990, and mm-hmm. bands have been there since about 1994, so, you know, 20 plus years on that. And I think the biggest thing that I'm excited about is that maybe it's just been doing it so long, but I feel like, to me, the some of the best programs, best coaches that I know and I have the most respect for: Butch Thompson, Scott Brown, Nate Yeske, Kirk Sarlous, John Savage. You know, for me, it just feels like that these programs where you, it feels like it's the norm. And I don't want to say, well, everybody's going to long toss because it's something I've been preaching so long. But I think that the reason long toss is so prevalent in college and high schools now is because I had a line I was thinking about when I knew I was going to talk to you today, which is, don't mess with Mother Nature. That was sort of the line. And the reason I said that line comes up is that it's natural for us as human beings to want to stretch and be free and feel relaxation. And so long toss is really epitomizes that. It's very intuitive to us. And I think that when you bring that principle to people, it just makes too much sense. And to the kids, it's a visceral effect. It feels too good. And so I think part of the reason why it's caught on is, number one, a lot of coaches out there believe in long toss anyway. It wasn't like I introduced them to long toss. But I think number two, I think you get overwhelmed by the feedback from all the players. And again, when you work with nature, it's a powerful thing. And to me, long toss is working with nature. So I'm not sure if I answered the question exactly, but the moral of the story is that it is exciting now to see that it feels like, for me, without being too subjective, that, because I have a lot of friends out there that are coaches all across the country now, and I can just feel the pulse of it. And there's other people out there in the world that are beating the drum now, like Ron Wolforth and Kyle Bodie, and it just feels more and more like you said, long toss. It's rare for me to talk to a kid at the area coach, for instance, or really meet a coach, and maybe they don't want to hurt my feelings, but it's rare for me to talk to somebody, and they're not into long toss. They're not into throwing and arm training. Like, that is part of the world now, and it's exciting because to me it's how you get an arm to get very, very healthy and very, very strong.
Mm-hmm. So I guess let's go off that, the getting an arm healthy. At this point, media coverage of arm injuries in the past maybe 5 to 10 years has really picked up, and with Jeff Passan's book The Arm coming out this year, kind of shedding a whole bunch of light on this situation and kind of this quote unquote epidemic of arm injuries. Kind of what are some of your thoughts? I know you have some pretty
passionate,
some pretty bold opinions. So what are some of your thoughts on kind of the state of arm injuries at this point?
Well, I think arm injuries, number one, far and away, are based on the fact that arms at the high school and college level, for the most part, I can speak really more for college. As I just said in the last answer, arm training and arm development and arm awareness is an all-time high. I feel like people are into training and development. Part of it is because everybody's sensitive to the fact that we don't want guys getting hurt. So, but the flip side to it is that there's also more of, that's why I love Jeff's book, there's also more of this awareness. Again, that's where Kyle Bodie comes in, and Wolforth and us and Cressy, is that we're all into this idea of intent and threshold and build it up. You know, you don't count how many steps you take every day because you want to save them when you're 60 years old or 70 years old, right? Mm-hmm. You actually want to walk more so you can walk. You know, I joke a lot with coaches, who's got the best arm on the field pound for pound? A BP pitcher. BP pitchers make 300 to 400 throws a day, 7 days a week for 40 years. And I'm not saying that it can't break down, but you get the idea. The idea is that they're use it or lose it. And so for me, the exciting part about where we're at right now, despite this epidemic, is that we're making tons of progress on the arm development, arm conditioning, arm training side. I actually feel like the biggest disconnect where the arm injuries are happening is because players are coming out of all of these great programs where they're training really well, and when they go into professional baseball, there's a number of organizations, I just throw a number out there to be safe, you know, a third of them to maybe half, that are basically conservative. They, instead of the individuality of what these players have done their whole lives to get to where they're at, there becomes more of a structured program that's really based on conservatism. It's really based on maybe worrying about things like workload and, you know, and to some and pitch counts. And I understand to some degree some of that there's some validity, but I use the word, as you know from the other day, deconditioning. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're in a culture now where for the good of it, players are very educated. They're very educated, and coaches are very educated on how to really condition arms well. And I feel like when they go into professional baseball, and again, I'm going to use 40 to 50% of the organizations, I feel like are really putting heavy restrictions and limitations on arms. And what happens is you decondition the arm. So it's almost like saying, let's just say that the average pitcher in college is used to running 10 miles a day. And I feel like when they get drafted, and again, there's, I think half of the organizations are doing an unbelievable job in supporting this new movement, actually. But I think if about half of the organizations, let's just say, they want the pitchers backing off to a quarter mile a day. It's that extreme, or half a mile a day, because they feel like they're protecting them. And what that does is it decongestions your arm, and you're still having them ramp up with adrenaline and throwing as hard as they can in games. The difference is now you've lost your whole base of the conditioning. And to me, it's just as straightforward as that. The only other thing I'd add to that is that I do feel like, and I have a manual I'll give you at the end of this, but I just finished a year-round throwing manual. And one of the main pieces to why I wrote the manual is because I've written an off-season throwing program, I've written an in-season program, I've written a program for inclement weather and how do you keep your arm in shape. But the one piece that I think is really crucial now, and the reason I had to learn this firsthand, is because I basically consulted with Cody Medeiros for 12 months from one June to the next June for the draft, and I had to learn with Cody, I had it on the fly, like, about all these different showcases. I mean, I know about him, but I didn't realize the degree to how many there were, when they are, the stops and the starts of the summer, the where is your training build up, when is your rest, when should you really air it out, when should you... And so I had to learn from that 12-month period with Cody that, wow, this sort of summer into fall is now all of a sudden a very, very vulnerable time. And I'm never going to put it on the showcases and like say it's their fault. I'm just going to say that because there's so many of them, and there's travel ball and there's scout ball, and there's so many things going on from, let's just say, June 1st to December 1st, that I feel like that now has become a very, very vulnerable time as well, because I think my key thing I talk about the manual stops and starts. I just think that you have to know how to build it up like a wave, build a great base, you know how to maintenance, you know when to rest the proper amount of time so you can build up again like a nice wave. And the problem is we have this very staggering, almost inconsistent ups and downs, and it's almost like what you do to a guy in a bullpen. You have him get up and down, six times in one game. Well, what's that guy going to be like a week later? He's up and down. He only gets in one of the games in a week, but he's been up and down four times. I mean, we all know what that's going to do to an arm. And so I think that's the other, when you ask me, I mean, there's probably some other subtle things, but to me, number one by far is the deconditioning of the arm. I believe in the professional world with about, 40 to 50% of organizations. And then the other big thing is these stops and starts in the summer and the fall, I think, are just put kids in a really vulnerable place.
Mm-hmm. This this is another thing that Jeff Passan gets into, is this kind of showcase culture. And this is something that I discussed with Hunter Green and his father, is kind of trying to focus on development and training, but also kind of having to do this this kind of pony show, and having to go out and show what you can do. What are your thoughts? I mean, is there an easy fix for that? Because this is a time where scouts really do need to identify the players that they want to follow up on, and really do need to start bearing down on who's the most talented player. And the showcases are kind of consistently jammed up against each other and not necessarily conducive to a proper training program. Is there an easy fix to that, or is this kind of just this is the way it works?
There's a really easy fix. And first of all, it's a great question. It's a very, very important question. The easy fix is this. This is, again, what I had to learn on the fly with Cody. Because I have a system that's built in that you just build up a certain way. You can go basically go as long as you want. I mean, obviously there comes a point where you want to rest, but you just keep the ball rolling for a while, and then there's a rest period. And then once you rest, there's a certain amount of time you need to rest, and there's a certain amount of time you need to rebuild up. So as long as you stay in this really simple format, you can't miss. The problem is that these kids are trying to, as you said, they're trying to juggle 12 different events over a 5-month period. And there's really no rhythm to it, and I think that's the big problem. So the fix is this. Now, you can do one of two things. One is you follow first of all, you follow the path of your training. So whatever you need to do in your training program, however many innings you pitch that spring, and if you're ready for a break period, or if you want to just keep rolling for another month and then you're ready for your break period, it's easy. You follow a very simple format where you just keep going, you keep going, you keep going, and then once you stop, you're going to have a rest period. And based on how many weeks you take off, there's that many weeks you build up again. So I have a really simple formula for my summer. It's called Navigating the Summer, which basically says if your spring season's over and it's June and there's still some really important showcases, just keep going. Mm-hmm. Just stay in shape. Just keep going. But if you decide to stop at any point for every 1 week you take off, you have to have 2 weeks of training again. And really, a third week is for at least two bullpens before you go out and throw in a game again. So what happens is if you take off 2 weeks, you add a week. So now you're off. So if you're off 1 week, you need 2 weeks. If you're out 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Well, if you're off 4 weeks, you're back kind of to our off-season build-up phase again,
yeah,
which is like a real rest period. So as long as you follow that, you can't miss because mm-hmm. you always have to rebuild and recondition and get your base right again before you get aggressive. So that would be one of the answers. The other answer would be, of course, is if you could put the showcase season. This is kind of right out of Nate Yeske. You know, I was talking with him at Oregon State. He's just a genius. But, you know, that the idea of we can put something where there's a dead period mm-hmm. so that the kids can just can kind of roll with the weight and stay in shape. And there's no stopping and starting. There's no shocking of the arm. Mm-hmm. You know you have to stay in shape. And once you stop, you have that rest period. You can build up when you're ready. Those would be the two main answers.
Mm-hmm. It seems like, you know, anywhere, everywhere in the world, there's these different philosophies. And everybody's critical of everyone else's. And there's sort of a disconnect and a whole bunch of different ideas being thrown out there. And what happens is sometimes, you know, something will seem like, sure, this is intuitive, this makes total sense, and then a player doing that gets hurt anyway. Kind of with all the information that's out there, how do you think we can kind of consolidate this? How do you think we can streamline the process and kind of start to build towards a more functional, something more conducive to having education kind of all around?
Well, I think number one, there needs to be an extremely high level of awareness that the key to arm health is to adapt to the players in this day and age. I'm not talking about the 8 to 15 year olds, but the kids that have proven themselves in high school and gone through good colleges. I think that there has to be a higher level of awareness that let's go to school on them. Let's adapt to them. I would get in a room personally. I would get in a room, Nate Yeske, Scott Brown, Butch Thompson, Kirk Starlous, John Savage. I would get the programs that are putting out the top arms. And granted, they recruit a lot of big arms too. But I'd go to the programs that are not only recruiting top arms. I go to programs that have been healthy mm-hmm. for the last 5 to 8 years. You know, if I'm a scout or I'm a GM, I'm going to send somebody from my front office. And I'm going to go talk to Kirk Starlous and Butch Thompson and Scott Brown and Nate Yeske and John Savage. And I can go on and on and on. And what's the common denominator? Oh, you guys like to throw a lot. Oh, you like to long toss a lot. You like to do band work. 4 out of 5 of you do driveline. 4 out of 5 of you do cressy. I mean, let's find out what's the commonality instead of throwing stuff on a wall and saying, you know, well, this is sort of about how many throws you should make at 60 feet, and you should make this many throws at 90 feet, and this many throws at 120, and then we're going to come in, and we're not throwing more than 4 minutes today, or we're only throwing for 10 minutes today. Like, why don't you go to people that are in the field that are living this every single day? Like, I'm not trying to make this about me, but I've been on the field for 26 years, like, doing the work. Doing the research, if you will, and the people that I feel like that are doing the research for me in a way, the coaches that I have, again, the you know, some of the greatest respect for that I know the best, the Butch Thompsons of the world and the Scott Browns and Yeskes of the world. And it's like, these are the people that I would want to get in a room and say, okay, what's the commonalities? Let's track you guys for a while, because to me, the research is done. I mean, I guess that's the sad part to me about why there's so many people throwing out so many theories of what the problem is. It's almost like you're chasing your tail. You're bobbing for apples. You know, I'm it's too close to home for me because I've lived it and I've been around it my whole life. But man, I feel like the answers are right there, and people are just going around and around in circles on this merry-go-round. Anyway, long story short is I just wish that they would do more research with the people that are out there that are having the success and having the healthy arms. And I'll tell you that the major league organizations right now that are the healthiest and strongest and have the least amount of injuries, I got news for you. They're tapping in outside of their organization now. I'm not saying they don't have good stuff inside, mm-hmm. but they're looking at long toss. They're into it. Teams that we've consulted with, Bodie, Wolforth, Cressy. I'm just saying, I mean, there's other things that are going out there as well, but they're not afraid to go outside the organization now and say, hey, what's going on? And you know, the funny thing is as I feel like there's more and more people in pro ball that are now starting to look outside of it to find out, hey, what is going on out there? Because they're realizing now they're getting kids from all these programs like Vanderbilt and TCU and Oregon State. And guess what all these kids are coming in with? Bands, Driveline, Cressy. I mean, so they're starting to realize by the power of numbers. Mm-hmm. So,
mm-hmm. Alan, that's all I got for you in terms of, kind of grilling you here. Where can people learn more? Where can people find your work? Where can people access more information on this?
It's really easy. Our website is jagersports.com. And what's cool about that is we have at the top of the article drop-down menu, there's got to be 20-plus articles. They're all free. YouTube, we've got everything from our throwing program to mental game stuff, all free. And then on Twitter, a lot of stuff we put out is just really educational information, a lot of mental game stuff. So that's at Jagersports, J-A-E-G-E-R. And really, that's it. They can go to our website. There's contact information there. And our Twitter account, I think, are the real two key pieces.
Awesome, Alan. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.